organizers for this wonderful opportunity to speak here. And apologize that in this workshop on operator spaces and quantum groups, there will not be any operator spaces in this talk, I mean, except for C-star algebras, really. This will be a sort of report on a work which is really in progress, but I will begin by a long review, and we will be repeating a lot of things that we heard already this morning in two talks, which is a good thing sometimes, so let's do it. Okay. Oops. High tech. All right. I will begin with my own definition of quantum groups, which will be a little different from what we heard this morning, but it will be a little more general, and I will show you how the different definitions and different approaches, how they're related. This part actually will be the longest part. I will review some newer results and definitions, and everything will be explained here. Then I will formulate a certain problem, solution to which might in future be given through a study of the object that I want to define later. So I will speak about Heisenberg relations. I will define that. I will define the Heisenberg double, and then I will tell you a little bit how we can try to describe it in the case of a specific example of a quantum group, which already was discussed a bit, but I will repeat the discussion on it. Okay, so what are multiplicative unitaries, which will be the basic objects of my theory of quantum groups? These are unitary operators on a tensor product of a Hilbert space with itself, and they satisfy something like this. It will be put into an equation for those who prefer equations, but this is what Fokker told us about, you know, that you have an operator which has two input slots, two output slots, and you need to make it work on a triple tensor product. So this is how you can do it. You can either make it act on the last two, you can make it act on the first two Hilbert spaces, or you can try to do something which is here. So you really act on the first and third Hilbert space in this tensor product. So let's be a bit more specific. The multiplicative unitaries that I will be using will be of a special kind, and these will be modular multiplicative unitaries. These will give me quantum groups. So let's see what they are. So a multiplicative unitary is called modular if it satisfies very difficult and technical conditions, which will be listed here in a moment, but I don't want you to pay attention to those conditions too much. They are very technical, and the reason why I'm showing them is this is the equation we had in the previous slide, multiplicativity, but then that's not a very hard condition to satisfy. So my unitary has to commute with a tensor product of two positive operators, so you can take the unit and it's okay, right? It's not a very hard condition. But then the next condition is here. If you take a pair of vectors x and y and another pair of vectors z and u, form simple tensors and try to compute the scalar product of x tens y with this, then this is supposed to be equal to that for some unitary, it's important that for some unitary W tilde acting on, you see, this is the complex conjugate of H. So what happened here is that X and Z switch their places here. This is X bar here, this is Z. It's not easy to explain why this exactly is the condition that I need, but with this condition, we will really get something that should be called a quantum group. So what we will be dealing with will be multiplicative unitaries satisfying this funny sort of condition. This, you see, that is easy to satisfy, but then this Q here, it must be possible to put some sort of unitary W tilde in here and have the equality. Yes, this is a weaker version of manageability. We proved a few years ago that his condition, which was the same with Q hat equal Q, can be replaced with this condition, and we still get the same kind of object. So this is called modularity. There are some reasons for that, but okay. So let me show you now how you get what we just had on the previous slide from locally compact quantum groups that were described by Leonid and Felker, which is from locally compact quantum groups to multiplicative unitaries. This actually has already been explained, but let's go. You take a locally compact quantum group, so it's a Cesor algebra A with co-multiplication delta and two weights, and my construction will be slightly different. I'm taking the right regular representation instead of the left, which doesn't really make much difference, but it saves me one thing. I never use the inverse, which is always, you always get into a little bit of trouble when you use inverse with quantum groups. So I try to use the right regular representation so that there's no inverse, at least at the beginning. Okay, so I take the regular representation, and what is this right regular representation? It's, see, you can use the co-multiplication to define this map. A times B goes to delta A, which is in the tensor product, times 1 times B, and that's from A tensor A to itself. Now, the algebra A includes into the GNS-Hilbert space of one of the weights. I take the right one so that it's unitary. So you it's a theorem that you can prolong this to a unitary operator on the GNS-Hilbert space of the right invariant weight tensor with itself. And in it, A tensor A sits nicely. Okay. And this is a modular multiplicative unitary. More, it's manageable, which simply means that Q hat is equal to Q. Okay. That's the way to get modular multiplicative unitaries from locally compact quantum groups. But for me, the group, which is A delta, well, it also has these weights, but I consider just A and delta without this extra structure. For me, it's defined by W. I can show you how to get from W to here. And this is how I define quantum groups. These are things that come from multiplicative unitaries. So how do they arise? You take a multiplicative unitary, which satisfies my extra condition, and you slice it. So you put a normal functional on the left leg of this operator on the tensor product of Hilbert spaces, which you can do. You obtain a certain space of operators on H. You can close it in norm. So, okay, this is an operator space. But it's a Cesor algebra. And the fact that it is a Cesor algebra follows from this very funny condition that we had in the beginning, that it's not the only thing that follows from it, but that's important. Okay. Then how do you reconstruct the co-multiplication? Well, we already had it, only then it was a little different because I switched from left to right. But what you do, you take an element of the Cesor algebra, A, tensor it with 1, and then conjugate with the unitary W, you really end up in the C star multipliers. When I say multipliers, I mean something simple, not CB or anything, just multipliers of the C star algebra A tensor A. And this map, which takes A to that, is a co-multiplication. It's a morphism from A to the tensor product A tensor A. By a morphism, I mean a non-degenerate star homomorphism from A to the multiplier algebra of the other algebra. Whenever I say morphism, this is what I mean. Okay, what properties does this construction have? Okay, the delta is, it's said on the previous slide, it's a co-multiplication, so it's co-associative, but there's another important thing. These sets, you see, delta A, 1 times B, and this other one, and you take span of all these elements, this is a dense subset of A tensor A. In fact, even the condition that it's a subset is already a non-trivial condition, because delta has its image in the multipliers. And this here, 1 tensor B, is a multiplier. It's not an element of A tensor A, if A doesn't have a unit. So the fact that the product actually belongs to A tensor A is already a condition, and the density of both these sets, classically this corresponds to cancellation laws in the group. So we like it. This is why we like it. Also, there exists an anti-multiplicative map, kappa, which already was defined by Leonid in his morning lecture. So you see it's marked in red here because to define it, I'm using, well, I'm taking a normal functional here. So I'm implicitly using this ultra-weak topology on B of H, which was not part of the data, really. I mean, what I want to study is the C-star algebra A and its co-multiplication delta, and the fact that it happens to be represented is in fact a coincidence. So it's marked in red because it's a suspicious construction. It's not canonical as for now, at least. But let's just press on with what we have. We have this kappa, which plays the role of the inverse in the group, and we have know a little bit more about it. We can decompose it into an anti-star automorphism of my C-star algebra A and analytic extension of a one-parameter group of automorphisms. You see, Leonid had a minus here, which also follows from the fact that I switched conventions to the right. But so I so R is an anti-automorphism of A. Tau T is a one-parameter group of automorphisms, which we know very well. It's implemented by the Q I had at the beginning. Okay, but the Q is also it's an operator in Hilbert, acting on a Hilbert space. It should not be part of my data to define a quantum group. It's just something that I use to phrase my very funny condition for the multiplicative unitary. Okay, what else do we get? We get the reduced dual, which we can get by taking our W and constructing a new W, with sigma being the flip on the tensor product. So this is what it looks like. You take your W, put star on it, and flip the legs, and you call it W hat. What's really good about it is that this W hat is again a modular multiplicative unitary, so you can play the same game we had. You can slice it, put a delta on it. Of course, with W hat, whatever comes out of the construction, you put a hat on. And you get another, well, I call it a quantum group, so it's A hat, delta hat. I don't know anything about weights. All I have is C-star algebra with a co-multiplication and some extra structure, these kappas, r's, and other things, but these were marked in red because they were dependent on the Hilbert space representation of my C-star algebra and on the W that I took for my construction. So what do we have? The A hat, it was constructed with W hat, but W hat was just W and with its legs crossed, so it's really like slicing W along the right leg. Then this again is in B of H, so it has some ultra-weak topology on it, one can prove that if we take these two C-star algebras, A hat and A, form their spatial tensor product and take multipliers of that, then W belongs here. But at that point, we have to treat it as a coincidence. I mean, W is just an operator on H tensor H. So happens that my two C-star algebras are represented on this, acting on this H, and it so happens that it's like that. What else? There is the biduality theorem, which was mentioned. So if we try to see what the dual of the of A hat delta hat is, we get back to A delta, which is an easy consequence of how we got there. We just flip the legs of W, so we do it again, and here we are. Of course, we have all the other stuff. I mean, we have kappa hat, R hat, and everything else. And look here, the Q hat that was in the beginning and had very strange role because it was only there for the commutation. It wasn't in the second part of my complicated condition of modularity. It came up here. It implements the dual scaling group. Okay, what is the problem that I have with it? The problem is that I can have many different unitaries on H tensor H, and I can choose different H also, which in the construction will give me isomorphic object A delta. I will have an isomorphism of Fischer algebras that is compatible with co-multiplication. And the operators will definitely be different. For example, one of them will be manageable, and the other one could not be made manageable. You will not be able to choose a Q to make it manageable. It will only be modular. So it's a fact, and one has to deal with it. And the contents of my work with Voronovich is in this theorem, which says that actually you don't have to worry that you have different multiplicative unitaries that give you the same quantum group, because these nice things, they co-inverse, and it's unitary, let's say, this anti-automorphism part, and this other part, which is plays the role of a positive part of an operator, are independent of the choice. It doesn't matter which W on which Hilbert space you take. It's independent. Also, the reduced dual that you construct from the same W. So, in principle, if you change the W, maybe the dual could be different. Well, it's not. It's independent with its co-multiplication and all its structure that we discussed. I mean, it's a vague statement, all its structure, but what we talked about. So this is all independent of the choice of W and the Hilbert space H. And this is important. The position of that, we had this operator sitting in here, but this now can be treated as an abstract Fischer algebra. And it turns out that whichever W you use, it's always the same element of this abstract multiplier algebra of A hat tensor A. We can call it, say, blackboard ball V. So this is the one treated as an element of the abstract multiplier algebra. And the last thing is that, the most important one really, and it's actually used to get all the other statements, that the ultra weak topology on A that we have from the fact that it's given as a subset of B of H is actually independent of which multiplicative unitary we take for this construction. So in a sense, this all these things, they depend on A and delta. So my definition of a quantum group is this is a pair A delta that comes from a modular multiplicative unitary. But this theorem says that it's not such a bad definition because it doesn't really matter what multiplicative unitary we take. Lots of stuff, the important stuff depends on A and delta. Okay. But there is a blessing in this problem that we had. Namely, it's a good thing that we have many different multiplicative unitaries. There is a theorem that says that if you have a modular multiplicative unitary, so MMU here, then it has this Q and Q hat, right? You can take this Q hat and consider just this map, which takes a positive element of your algebra defined by this. Okay, so this W defines A delta. It says here gives rise to it, right? And you can take a positive A, put Q here, Q over here, take the trace, and see what happens. This is a weight on your Fischer algebra. And it happens that this weight is right invariant. And moreover, it is the hard measure, so something we really like and we're looking for, provided that this weight is not, for example, infinity everywhere except for zero. Okay, provided the sets of integrable elements is norm dense, because this is a weight on a C-star algebra, so I'm not talking semi-finite, but locally finite. Okay, but this means that we could simply try every W available. Okay, take all of these, well, maybe we could find all of them, and then just check. If we get a locally finite weight, then we're there. We have a right Haar measure, and we're happy. Because then we go to the definition of Vass and Kustermans. Well, it's just one weight, but we already have this scaling group and the anti-automorphism R, so we really have two weights, and we have a locally compact quantum group. So, and let me also mention that in all known examples of modular multiplicative unitaries, you're in the end able to travel this route and find the Haar measures. But there still is no proof that the Haar measure exists. It exists in every example, but we don't have a theorem. And the reason why Voronovich and then myself became interested in this approach without Haar measure is that simply when you look at any book on harmonic analysis, you don't define a locally compact quantum group with the Haar measure in the definition. You prove the existence, so that's what we'd like to have here. Well, so far we don't have it, but look, we have this ultra-weak topology on A, which really means that we have the double commutant in any of those representations, right? We have the von Neumann algebra. So in a sense, L infinity of our quantum group is uniquely defined, so we have the class of the Haar measure. We don't have the Haar measure, but we have L infinity. So it's not so bad, but it's not very good either. Okay. Now, the Heisenberg representations came up when we tried to see what all possible modular multiplicative unitaries for a given quantum group could be. And it turned out that these Heisenberg representations and relations, which I will describe in a moment, simply came up. So let me sort of switch to another topic, and they will merge with the previous one. So let's now start with A delta, and it, in my world, it always comes from my multiplicative unitary, a modular multiplicative unitary. So it already has its dual companion, and it has its special unitary element here that comes from W, whichever W we take. And now a Heisenberg, a pair of representation of A hat and A on some Hilbert space is called a Heisenberg pair if the following equation is satisfied. So what is this? This is supposed to look like the Pentagon equation, but instead of numbers, you here have pi hat and pi, but this could explain what I mean. What we do is we take representations of A and A hat on the same Hilbert space, so we're able to squeeze these two algebras into one Hilbert space. What we want is to see how they commute. Physicists would say, see the commutation relations. And this is what we do. We take this element V, put it in the second and third leg, and apply pi hat to V's front leg, but it's in the middle right now. And a similar thing with V1 pi. This is V here in the first leg, and then pi puts it on the Hilbert space. So this is where it is. This is an element of A hat. All of these are elements of A hat, tensor compact, tensor A multipliers. So this is the analog of the Weyl form of Heisenberg commutation relations, really. And we call a pair of representations of A and A hat a Heisenberg pair if that is satisfied. Now, such a pair always we always get one when we have a multiplicative unitary giving rise to my quantum group. If I have some other multiplicative unitary, the ones that I want to classify, let's say, then what is it? Then it defines my A and delta, but it gives them already represented. So this is where my pi hat and pi come from. So whenever I have some other multiplicative unitary giving rise to my favorite quantum group A delta, I get a pair of representations, pi hat and pi, and this is satisfied. So Heisenberg pairs of representations come up when you have another multiplicative unitary giving the same quantum group. And now if I have a Heisenberg pair of representations, I can define its Caesar algebra. So I have a pair, pi hat and pi, and what I do is I just multiply the images of the two algebras and close it. This is contained in the Hilbert space on which into B of which pi hat and pi go, and I call this D pi hat comma pi, and this is a Caesar algebra. Why is it a Caesar algebra? Well, we have this. This is the defining condition for a pair of representations to be of interest here. So, let's put some more information here. The point is that my algebra A can be obtained by slicing, now not W, but slicing this abstract unitary in the multiplier algebra with omega, look where I take it from. It's an A hat lower star. It's not a pre-dual, but what I mean by that is the functionals that are continuous in this ultra weak topology that A hat has uniquely. Okay, so this is it doesn't mean a pre-dual, but it means normal functionals on A. It's an abusive notation. And here are normal functionals on A hat. And if you just take this equation and slice it from the left and from the right, then you will see that actually you could have as well taken pi A, pi hat of A hat in that order, and you get the same space. So this really is invariant under the star, and it is a Caesar algebra. So with any pair pi hat pi, we associate a Caesar algebra, which is just this product. And also pi and pi hat are morphisms from A to this product, morphisms from here to here. Well, it's instrumental that they do not land in this Caesar algebra. They land in the multipliers of this Caesar algebra. But they are morphisms. They are non-degenerate star homomorphisms. There is another point of view on what this D pi hat pi is. Namely, you can just take a algebraic tensor product of A hat with A and just send, well, this probably should have a hat over here and here as well, but it's not wrong the way it's written. So you can just take this map, which takes such tensors into such products, and the image of that map, when you close it, you get exactly this. This can be helpful to, this point of view can be helpful to define the universal algebra out of all these d pi hat pi's. Namely, you can take the algebraic tensor product of A hat with A and simply look at all possible pairs of Heisenberg pairs pi hat pi and take this soup, and this defines a nice norm on this Caesar algebra. And I will cheat a little bit, but there is a pair which realizes the supremum. And for it, you take some sort of a sum of everything in a way, but it's not bad. I mean, the way we really do it, and something I didn't put on the slides, is that everything is, all the Caesar algebras and Hilbert spaces are separable, and this can also be done in such a way. So it's a direct sum of everything, but it still is separable. And the Heisenberg double of my quantum group A delta is this, the C-star algebra D, which is by definition associated to that pair, which gives the supremum. Okay, that's my definition of the Heisenberg double. I realize that that phrase, Heisenberg double, already appeared many, many times, especially in purely algebraic context of Hopf algebras and multiply Hopf algebras. And it's very likely that there is a strong relation of this object to the algebraic one, but there is no definite statement because our locally compact quantum groups and the quantum groups we get from multiplicative unitaries are not really that much related to algebraic objects. Many of them, yes, but not all of them. So that will be my Heisenberg double, this C-star algebra. Of course, we have these morphisms from A to D and from A hat to D, given by rho hat and rho. But from now on, we will just forget about rho hat and rho, and just these morphisms are injective, and we can treat A and A hat simply as subalgebras here in the multipliers. And they are not just subalgebras, they are subalgebras whose product is dense, already in D, norm dense in D. Very often you see something like this when you have a cross product. So if you think of D as a cross product of, let's say, some C-star algebra with action of some group, then say A hat will be C-star of that group, and it's contained in the multipliers of the cross product, but of course not in the cross product C-star algebra. And the same, the original C-star algebra is contained in the multipliers, but not in the cross product, and their product is the cross product, exactly. So this is a very analogous situation. In fact, in most examples, it really is. This Heisenberg double is most of the time is a compact operator. This is the standard thing that it's the cross product. For example, if my quantum group is really a group. Yeah, well, these are multipliers of these. Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's a module over those. Yeah.
Is there an inner product that sends you to A
half
to A?
Oh, no, there is an inner product that sends you to D. No, I don't know. Well, it's likely. Okay, and a simple consequence, which here is called a theorem, but it's really, it's obvious from the way we define V, is that it's universal for a certain kind of maps. So if you have, now not necessarily representations pi and pi hat into B of H, but just morphisms to some C-star algebra that satisfy this, then instead of going from A to C and from A hat to C with the other arrow, you might as well go from A or A hat into D, and there is a unique map psi that completes this diagram, and this is the standard thing. It's nice, but standard. Okay, so we defined this object with this property, and now we can use this. So, for example, there is a unique map phi hat which goes from D into this, A hat times D, which really is very simple if you take A in A, which is in the multipliers, and is just a tiny bit more sophisticated if you take A hat from the algebra A hat, which also is in the multipliers, and this determines the morphism phi hat uniquely. And very similarly, you have a phi which goes from D, this time to A, not A hat, A tends D, such that we have that phi on element of A is delta and element of A hat is trivial. And moreover, these things, phi hat and phi, are left actions of my quantum group, and they also continue. So this word continues here is it's not my invention. I mean, people call these things continuous. What I mean is, first of all, actions. These are the properties that coactions have, so we call them actions of quantum groups. And this is continuity. So these density conditions, again, sort of, we get. And just for amusement, let me sketch the proof of how you do it. So to get phi hat, you need to get a map from D to something. So you construct pi and pi hat. So what you take is, of course, these two, and it happens to be a Heisenberg pair. So it determines a map from D. Okay, and also since D is the closure of these, either that product or that, you can try to see what phi of D is. So phi of D is phi of A times phi of A hat up to closure. So we know what phi hat does to A, namely not really much. And phi hat to A hat, what it does, it just acts like delta hat. So look what we have here. Delta hat of A hat times A hat times 1. Remember the density conditions that I spent a little moment on at the beginning? This thing here, this part, can be simply written like that, up to closure, of course. So we multiply that, and we get A hat in the first leg and A hat in the second leg. So this is really A tensor D up to closure. This is how you put it. It's just an amusing thing. Okay, let's see what it looks like in the case of the quantum AZ plus B group, which was already described, but I will really describe a slightly different version of it. There are a few versions, and they're very nice. So this will be quantum group given by Cesar algebra A and delta. This Cesar algebra will be generated by certain elements, A inverse, and B, affiliated with A, so they don't really belong to A. They are, in fact, unbounded, but it can be handled. One thing that is not written on the slide, because there wasn't enough room, is that they are also normal. And here are the relations that we have. AB equals Q square BA. We had it this morning. AB star equals B star A, which already shows that if they are normal, that they cannot be bounded. And the point is that I don't really have to take Q real, like this morning, but if I add a certain condition, namely a spectral condition, for example, that the spectra of A and B are contained in this funny thing, and Q is right here, so that is a collection of logarithmic spirals, and this is really a sort of subgroup of the non-zero complex numbers generated by Q and its imaginary powers. So Q is a certain complex number which has absolute value strictly less than 1 and has to satisfy a bit more than that. Has to be a special number, but there's a lot of those. And for example, we can find out that there exists a Cesar algebra A, which is generated in a special sense, but very nice sense, by certain unbounded elements that satisfy these relations, and their spectra are contained in the closure of that subgroup of C without zero. So zero is in the spectrum, but it's in the closure of just limit point. Let me point out that the fact that the spectra are contained in this set is a part of the definition of my Cesar algebra. And this is what we call commutation relations. It's not only algebraic expressions that have to be equal. It's also something like that. This is a relation. Because you can imagine operators satisfying those relations without their spectra contained in that set. So it's an extra condition. And what do we have? Well, we have what was written down this morning. that the co-multiplication acts on generators like this. A is group-like, and B goes to A times B plus B times 1. Now the plus is in blue and has a dot over it, and the dot actually was on one of your slides, but not both of them. The point is that, you see, my A and B are normal. Delta is a morphism of Fischer algebras, so it will take normal things to normal things. But if I take just A and B, that A, B equals Q squared BA and AB star equals B star A, then the operator A tensor B plus B tensor 1 might not even have a normal extension. And there will not exist a morphism delta which would take my B to that. Now it turns out that if I restrict the spectra, this is why I did it, if I restrict the spectra, then this operator without the dot, just the sum, is plausible, and its closure is normal, and there actually does exist this morphism delta, and the dot simply means closure of the sum. So these things are a bit complicated when you really try to see what's going on. So if the spectra are wrong, then this operator does not even have a normal extension. So okay, and there is it's a very funny thing with AZ plus B group, because there is a certain WS, and here S stands for special. It's special, we know it, just we found it, and it's one that gives rise to A delta, so it's a modular multiplicative unitary on a certain Hilbert space K. If I use my machinery, I will get A delta like defined before, but also the double commutant of A will be equal to the double commutant of A hat in this particular situation. It's just, so it's this is why I call it a special one. Now, this special one can be written down like this. These F and chi are just certain special functions on these sets where the spectra are. So it's not important. They are very complicated special functions sometimes. And we also know, apart from the fact that we know this special W, we know a general form of all representations of my group A delta. Now, what are representations? I never mentioned that before, but a representation of a quantum group A delta is a unitary element, curly V, of multipliers of compacts on some Hilbert space tensor A, satisfying this equation, this condition here. What is it? Look, if I think of A as functions on my group, on my quantum group, then A tends compacts is functions with values in compacts, and multipliers of that is bounded functions on my group with values in not compacts but all operators, but strictly continuous. And this really translates to a strongly continuous unitary representation if you also take this into account. And this is what I mean by a unitary representation. So we know what they look like. They always look very similar to that, with some B hat and some A hat, which satisfy exactly the same relations as A and B. Okay, so in fact we know the reduced dual, and this is why we can write this. And we know the universal dual as well, and they are equal in this case. And this is just that F and chi are special functions, and they're not important. And in this special case of AZ plus B group, we can try to describe, let's say, just any modular multiplicative unitary which gives rise to AZ plus B group. So we can try to do it. So let's see. We take one. It's on H tensor H. Now, then I say that if this U gives rise to my AZ plus B group, then it can be written like this, which is fishy because WS was special and it was in B of K tensor K, not in B of H tensor H. The algebra that we get from U is isomorphic to A. This is our assumption. And this isomorphism is continuous for the ultra-weak topologies that those two algebras have. So we can also apply it to the double commutant. And so the second leg of WS can be mapped into B of H, but the first leg has the same double commutant. So it can also be mapped with the same map into B of K, from B of K into B of H. Okay? So it actually is possible to write things like that with appropriate things in mind, that this WS is moved to act on this Hilbert space. And also so my U differs from WS by V, where V is this thing, so it's a representation. A hat, B hat satisfy all the same things as A and B, but also they commute with this pair in the best possible sense. So if you take, say, absolute values of these, they will strongly commute with absolute values of these, and the phases will commute and everything will commute. So we have this description. It can also be written in a little different way, using very sophisticated properties of these special functions. And so now everything became one, looks like one representation, and it really is. And if you look really closely at this, and remember that the ones with hats commute with the other ones, and also if you know by heart the formula for co-multiplication, delta of B is A times B plus B times 1, then you will be able to see that, only instead of a tensor product you have just a product, but they commute, so it's not such a big deal, and also it's reversed, but this is because it's co-multiplication on the dual group, which is, in this particular case, just the opposite group of AZ plus B. And if you look long enough and concentrate, or if you're Voronovich, then you know it's in a second, then this fact really means that if you take this phi hat, which starts in B, in my Heisenberg double, then what is pi here? Pi, the point is that pi here is the representation of D defined by U, because U puts A and A hat in some Hilbert space H. Since it does it, you can put D on that Hilbert space using this U. So this is this pi, and pi of course does not have to be a faithful representation of D. V is very huge, it's this direct sum of everything. But if you first use this action of the dual group, then this map is already one-to-one. And this is as far as we got in the classification of multiplicative unitaries for this quantum group AZ plus B. So thank you very much. I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought about it, and perhaps something like this could be found in the literature on the algebraic side of things. But the Heisenberg double that we defined has definitely the same name that other Heisenberg doubles, but we're not exactly sure if it's the same thing that other people defined. So, as you saw, the definition is really a non-constructive and sort of well, you could, so I'm not sure. I mean, for the AZ plus B group, I guess that the other extreme, the sort of minimal thing, would be take A times A hat as represented by W special. Because W special is like the smallest one that we have, but it's not a theorem, it's my hunch.